Wendy Domaty did it exactly correct when reporting soccer scores. If one team does not score, you cannot say zero or to nothing. You can't say one to nothing.
No goose egg.
You can't say goose egg. Don't say nest. Don't say egg. Don't say nest egg. You have to say...
Thank you, Jimmy Stewart. Was that who that was?
Albert Brooks.
Oh, yeah.
Albert Brooks.
He sounds like Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, on purpose. He was very influenced by the work of Jimmy Stewart. You must say nil. It gives it a European flair. I can't explain it.
I heard Dave Emmett say that earlier, and then Domaty just said it, and I've never used that ever.
You have to. That's the law.
It's a thing we do.
Yep.
I didn't know that either, to be honest. Kim Gordon told me yesterday, she said, you know, you have to say nil. I'm like, why?
It's crazy. It's a thing that's been happening for. It's like when you're giving a sports score, you always say the higher score first. Every once in a while, somebody will slip and they'll say, and the White Sox lost to Baltimore 5-7, and you go, oh no,
that's
7-5. The higher score always goes first. But in soccer, you must say nil, or a referee will come to your home and flog you.
It happens.
You want that?
It happens. Yeah, I'm painful.
I didn't know
you were so European.
Oh, I'm very European, Wendy. Very European.
Good to know.
I took a lift today.
That means an elevator?
Yeah, I took an elevator. Very good. Thank you. Yeah. Yep.
How's your bum? Isn't that British?
Now that's a question you would ask my wife, because that would mean me.
That would make perfect sense.
Can I throw something controversial at you? Are you in the mood for something controversial?
It's our last day in the studio.
Would you prefer not?
We don't have to. Listening to Steve Cochran wrap up like that really made me sad.
Oh.
You've been here longer than I have.
Yeah.
I will never work in a showcase studio, an Allstate showcase studio like this again, where it's street level. But I'm ready to just, let's go.
It's time to move on, you say.
Yeah. Enough wallowing.
Tradition be damned.
Chop, chop.
Yeah. I can understand that. That's been the feeling of most of the people here, you know, because this move has taken a while, and everyone's like, there's better things ahead. Let's start it now, you know. But
aren't you sick of carrying your office around with you on your back?
I have been doing that the last several weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm ready.
There's no place to. They took all of our stuff. There's no more desks or anything. So all the show prep. I've been hauling around with me.
Here's a little tidbit. If you'd like to see where our desks went to and our chairs, you can go to the Museum of Broadcast Communications because they were donated.
Right.
Very exciting. I'm sure there will be a plaque.
Will be the lowest rated exhibit in the history of the Chicago Broadcast Museum. Here's where Wendy sat. Here's where Bill sat.
And here's Garfield Goose.
There's going to be a Sominex sponsor on that one.
Go ahead with your controversy.
All right. Ron Howard asked a question yesterday that I thought was brilliant. For people who don't know, Ron Howard is Opie. And he's done other things since, apparently. I'm reading that he's a director of films now.
I just know him from Arrested Development.
Right. Some of you may know him as Richie Cunningham on The Happy Days.
Never heard of it.
And he was also on a show called The Smith Family with Henry Fonda. That only I know.
No. I remember that.
Do you remember
that.
The Smith Family?
Yes, I do.
That was a great show.
I totally remember.
That was a big deal because Henry Fonda at the time was just coming off of being a big A-lister movie star. And everyone went, well, you're not going to get Henry Fonda to do TV. But it was a one-hour drama, The Smith Family.
He wore a lot of sweaters, didn't he?
Yeah.
Like Mr. Rogers-type sweaters? Or am I imagining it?
There were episodes where he had sweaters on, yeah.
That's what I remember.
That was the whole show. Mr. Smith would decide every morning, should I wear a sweater or not? It was a very exciting time in television.
Bill Cosby stole that from him with the sweaters.
Yes, he did. All right, so Ron Howard puts this question on Twitter, and it ends up being extremely political. I don't know. I think his intention was to be kind of political, but it ended up being incredibly political.
That's how it happens these days.
Boy, doesn't it?
I mean, you can say egg salad.
People go nuts. What about Hillary?
Lock her up.
Egg salad? What about Hillary, huh? All right, so...
Thanks, Obama.
His question was, when was America at its greatest? Can you tell me an era that reflects the again that we hope to return to? That's fantastic.
That's totally political.
That's a great question. So do you think his aim was to stir people up?
Yes,
and go,
because make
it?
America great again. How does it get great again?
I think because it's Ron Howard, I chalk it up to him just being curious. Nah. Because if you've been walking around the country the last year and a half, you've heard that phrase thousands of times. And I myself have said to myself, well, I wonder when exactly. Let's be specific, you know? And then people texted in, and I'll read you some of the texts. But, you know, they would pick a decade or a year or a part. And then other people would jump on it and go, well, in the era you're referring to, you know, we had McCarthyism. Or in the era you're referring to, we were the most racist country we'd ever been. Or in the era you're, you know, there was a lot of that back and forth. But I think
it's a great question.
I think that's a fantastic question.
But it was definitely, you know, if the again wasn't in there, it wouldn't have been political.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think about that. That's what the again part is what made it political.
Yeah, because, you know, Donald Trump's motto, make America great again.
Right.
I would like America to go back when we were nicer to one another.
So when would that be exactly?
Probably before the election results.
But so early November of 2 years ago.
I think before Donald Trump even thought about running for president. That's what I think.
That would be the era. You know, we keep advancing, but there's always, I mean, I can't think of a time where there wasn't some glitch, where there wasn't something where it's never going to be perfect.
No.
It's never going to, there's always going to be checks and balances, pros and cons. There's going to be some things that we go, well, I think that was, you could ask the same question about your own life. You could go, what was the best time of your life? And no matter what that best time was, there was something there that
clouding it.
Yeah.
I agree.
Right?
I don't like how everybody's so mean to one another. I really don't recall that.
We're at an all-time
ever.
High on
yeah.
that. Yeah. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, you know, I have friends that don't think the same political ways that I do, and you could have a discussion without people, like, getting mad and leaving your house.
Right.
Now you can't, there's no discussion. You just, oh, you're an idiot, and you walk out.
So how did that change so dramatically? What happened that made that the norm? I've said this before. I remember so many nights when I was growing up that my parents would have a dinner party and there'd be four or six or eight friends over and they differed on things politically and there'd be a discussion either during dinner or after dinner about things where it never really got heated. It was just obvious that they were on opposing sides and nobody left angry. Everybody just kind of went, oh, well, their opinions are different than ours. That's interesting. They would talk about it and move on. That doesn't happen much anymore.
There's so much competition now and I'll just blame social media because everybody blames that for everything, but there's so much competition to be right now.
Yeah.
And you know, before it was like you'd hear people go, wow, I didn't see it that
yeah.
way. Now it's just like, if someone doesn't think it like you,
yeah,
you know, it's my way or the highway.
Yes.
They're wrong.
Yeah,
there's my way and you're an idiot. That's all that's going on now.
So how do we go back to the more
oh my god civil... If I had the answer to that, I'd win the Nobel Peace Prize,
because my fear is it's going to get worse before it gets better. I don't know how it could get too much worse, but aren't you afraid that it'll just decline more than fix itself?
Yeah, but in order for something to be fixed, it has to be broken down. That's history has
Are
shown
we not
us
there,
that.
Though? We're kind of there,
we're,
aren't we?
We're pretty close. We're circling the bowl.
Yeah.
Haven't gone right down it
I
yet.
I know. What did you think of Ron Howard's question? When was America at its greatest? Is there an answer to that? Because, like I said, no matter what great year or era you choose, there's still a bunch of flaws. So what's the answer to that question? Give us a call. We're at 312-981-7200. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Send that to him. I bet he'd use it. Ron Howard, actor, director, father of Bryce Howard from Jurassic Park, Wendy.
Can't wait to see that, by the way.
He sparked something of a political debate on Twitter. He asked a question that doesn't really, like, when you think about it at first, you go, I don't know, is this going to make people upset? But then it ended up making people upset. He said, when was America at its greatest? Can you tell me an era that reflects the again that you hope to return to? Referring, of course, to Donald Trump's Make America Great Again campaign. So a bunch of people responded in different ways, but let's take a call or two and see what people think.
All right, Larry has called us at 312-981-7200. Hey there.
Good morning.
What do you think of all this, Larry?
Well, I get upset very easily when I watch the evening news. However, regardless of that, when the president takes the oath of office to become president, there is a special oath of office, which we hear once. I think we all, especially the president being inaugurated, should get back to saying the preamble to the United States Constitution. That says it all in terms of what our goals should be. And they're everlasting, if we're worth anything. Secondly, the greatest time in history, I think, was during World War II, when we all pulled in the same direction to defeat the Nazis.
During the war or once the war was finished?
I think during the war. After the war was finished, there was a lot of strife and so forth, with workforce growing and so forth, and unions starting to raise.
Yeah.
So I would say during World War II.
Even though the loss of life, I know how it ended, and it ended well, spoiler alert, but the loss of life was so great during that period, would you take that into account when assessing it as the best or not?
No, I wouldn't.
No?
That's the price
you pay.
It's a reality, but, you know...
It did seem like we all came together. I wasn't around, but my grandfather, it seemed like the country came together to get stronger.
I was born before Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother and my father were both in the war. And I just remember, sure, they didn't want to talk about it when they got home because it was so horrible.
Right.
But, you know, when you're faced with a devil like Hitler, and now we've got some similar situations where we're separating children from their parents.
Right.
That's exactly what the Nazis did.
Yep.
Oh, it's the Democrats' fault. I heard that this morning, that's what's happening.
You know, there's a lot of blame to go everywhere. Even with, you know, there's people who are for the current White House administration and against. That's a reality.
Yeah.
You know, if you think you can satisfy all the people all the time, you and I are both smoking something.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, and I'm out.
So
can you set me up, Larry?
don't do it.
Larry, we appreciate your call.
Thanks, Larry.
And I agree with him for most of it.
Yeah.
Kathy, we don't have a lot of time, but we wanted to take your call. Go ahead.
Yeah. When my son was a senior in high school a couple of years ago, he had a history teacher with a very different opposing political view than he. And they would get into it back and forth, sparring in class. And one day when my son left the room, another girl came up to him and she said, you know, Charlie, how do you talk to the teacher like that? He's the guy who's going to give you the grade. And he said, you know, he's one of my favorite teachers. We are completely different, polar opposite politics. But he said, you know, this is what's going to make the world better, when people can express their ideas and do it in, like, a civilized way. He ended up a teacher, and she could not get her head around that. And that kind of scared me and my husband both, to think you couldn't have the kind of discussion that Bill's parents had with his friends, their friends. How is it that, like, it's clear why these people leave you sin or you're an idiot? What? How did that happen?
I don't know.
The kids have right. You know, the kids have the right idea. You can have it. I'm a teacher. I love to get the kids going with differing ideas.
How smart of him to have that figured out at such a young age. Good for him.
We lost Kathy, but she raised him well. That is an interesting point. We have to take a break. We're going to do some news. This is our last show from the Tribune Tower here. But we want to share the wealth. We have a pair of tickets to see Gordon Lightfoot in concert. The legend lives on, Bill. It's happening Sunday, September 16th at the Copernicus Center here in Chicago. You can hear the hits like If You Could Read My Mind, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, and Gordon will share his own personal anecdotes and stories. Get reserved tickets at CopernicusTickets.com or give us a call right now, 312-981-7200. What number, caller?
Caller 5.
312-981-7200. Caller 5 walks away with Gordon Lightfoot tickets.
Wendy, you're going to have to help me with this fella's name. I don't know that I can pronounce
it
correctly.
I can't talk today.
Pat McGann is here. He's performing at Zanies.
Pat McGann.
The original Zanies on Wells Street. And that's this weekend. Although I'm hearing, Pat, that at least one of the shows is already sold out. Is that true?
Yes. Tonight, the 8 o'clock show is sold out.
That's a testament to you.
But then we also have a 10:15, which is not sold out. Close to sold out.
Yeah. Get your tickets now.
Zanies. That's why I'm here.
Has all your ticket information. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys? This is more about you today.
I'm emotional. Wendy's fine.
Yeah.
which is on a daily basis pretty much the way things operate.
I would be emotional too. This is for me, just coming here as a guest. I love coming here, doing your show, and I've been on Steve's show a bunch, and it's awesome. This is Chicago. It doesn't get more Chicago than this. Walking by here, and
it's iconic. It's legendary. It's been such an honor to be in this building, but I don't feel I have the right to be upset. I've only been here a little over 3 years.
You can still be upset, though.
Yeah, just let's get on with it.
It was a daily routine. Yeah, I guess.
There's nothing we can do to change it. So what am I supposed to do? We could just nonstop broadcast and refuse to leave. Like,
yeah,
just from
that?
Now till...
That's a fun radio stunt.
That's a good perspective to have, Wendy. But I would just complain. I would whine. That's what I do.
Yeah.
This is the one time I haven't whined or complained. How about it?
Did you do this when you were a kid? My dad had a deal with the company he worked for that every 2 years he got a company car, and we would drive with him to the dealer and we would give them our old car and get a new car. And I would just sit in the old car and go, oh, the memories, all washed away.
Right.
You know, in a Ford LTD.
I had that every year, like, moving out of college, like, you know, the end of the first dorm.
Yeah.
Freshman year. And be like, oh, man, this is it?
It's hard.
It always works out.
Yeah.
You're going to love it over there.
Change is scary, but almost every time that there's change, it works out for the better.
Yeah,
almost every time.
I find that it's nice to, you know, locate someone to blame.
Yes. Find someone to be the scapegoat.
Unleash anger and frustration on them.
Well, you know what's upsetting is the other shows all get to go to this nice facility on Wacker, and Wendy and I are going to broadcast from a Junior's Hot Dogs in Elmhurst. That doesn't seem
Can
fair.
Can I tell you I'd be cool with that? We could have hot dogs every day.
Oh, I'm in. All right.
Now I used to love Junior's.
Me too. They had this weird kind of an orange drink there. Do you know what I'm talking about? It was like a creamy orange drink that nobody else seemed
like
to...
Like a dreamsicle made out of...
Oh, yeah.
Like a melted dreamsicle.
Yeah, I kind of do remember that. And they did not have Vienna beef, I don't think. Which was kind of strange, because that's I'm
the
very particular about
Chicago.
That.
Me too.
Yeah. I don't know if they switched her. But
do you like the casing? Do you like the snap?
Yeah, I feel like I don't react well to hot dogs if they're not Vienna beef.
Is that true?
Yeah, I get sick. I don't know.
They
don't
taste as good. There's hardly any flavor.
Yeah. What about a Dave Berg? Would be okay with the
no,
Dave Berg?
The only other one was the one that they
Hebrew
they
National.
Those are okay.
The Red Hot Chicago was pretty much. I think didn't they have like a lawsuit, like some legal?
Oh,
it was pretty
I didn't
much
know that.
The same recipe as
really.
Vienna beef. I think so.
Really,
we
might
get
be
the
wrong.
Vienna beef without the casing for at home pleasure, and then you know when we go out, I really like the casing where it snaps when you bite it.
Yeah,
but
it
Vienna
up.
Beef all the way.
Oh, for sure.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you.
To you. Are you working on Father's Day? Is there a Father's Day show?
Yeah, we have one that night, 8 o'clock on Sunday.
The kids will be there?
No.
Bring the kids.
I was going to bring my daughter today
Why
to this.
Why did you bring her?
Last minute, her cousins were there, and she didn't...
Rather play with them than you.
Yeah. So they have like a whole day planned. I think they're going down to Maggie Daly Park. And
that'll be fun. That'll be really fun. Other than the show, are there Father's Day plans? Will they do something for you in the daytime? What will they do?
I think we're going to go to my sister's for brunch, hang out, see my dad. Just nothing major.
What's
you know?
Your dad like? I've never met your dad. What's he like? Does he also have a similar sense of humor to yours?
My dad is funny. My mom is, I think I'm probably more similar, like, sense of humor to my mom.
Are you really?
Yeah, she's very sarcastic and just loves, she just loves a laugh, loves funny
stuff. That's where you learned it from your mom?
Yeah, but no, my dad, too. My dad's just a little bit more dry. He's very, he was a attorney, and then he was a judge here. He, like, ran traffic court in Chicago.
Wow.
And he's very, you know.
I wish I would have known
very
you
particular.
Several years ago.
Yeah, right. I always talk about my dad, like, how he used to give me directions. He would, like, use that to give me, like, knowledge he had stored up in his brain and family history. Like, we lived on the south side. I'd be like, I'm going downtown. What do you think? He's like, you got 57 north.
Right.
That's how they build all the interstates. They're all the odd numbers go north and south. That's how they did it under Eisenhower. And then you got the Dan Ryan. You know, he was president of Cook County Board.
Oh.
You take that to Cermak. He used to be mayor of Chicago.
I love that.
He was actually killed down in Florida. They were trying to assassinate FDR, and they got Cermak. Anyway, take a left on Ashland. You know, your grandfather used to have a tavern on Ashland. You're going to see an old hospital. Your uncle was born there. He was Breach. Like, where are you going again, son? I'm like, I'm going home. I was supposed to meet those guys an hour ago.
Now I'm late.
Yeah, he loves to jam all his stuff in.
Now, my dad would give directions by which food places were nearby. He'd say, you go to the Baskin Robbins, you turn left. When you get to Kentucky Fried Chicken, you take a right.
Right,
it was always
right.
The food places on the way.
My wife always does that. Like, if she's in the car, I'm like, where are you? She'll be like, I'm at 95th and Portillo's. I'm 103rd Michelle.
Pat McGann is here. You can see him at Zany's. One of the shows is sold out. Which one is sold out?
Tonight at 8 o'clock. And then we
that one's sold out, but there's plenty of tickets, or not plenty of tickets. There
I think
are
the
some...
Saturday 9. We do three on Saturday. So
wow,
seven,
how do you do three shows in one day?
9, 11, 15. Yeah, that's a long one. God, I work so hard.
You do.
Yes. It's like being a coal miner, isn't it?
Isn't it? It's tough.
But be honest, there have been nights, because there were nights that I worked at Zany's where there were three shows. Sometimes by the third show, you'll start something and you'll go, did I already do this?
Exactly.
Did I say this already? Yes. Or was that yesterday? When was that? Right.
That happens every time. Yeah. Even on two show nights sometimes. And for me, I don't always have like a set order. Like I have a general idea of what's going
to
come next. But sometimes I switch the order up
completely. Yeah, sure.
And that's when you really run into that.
I would always designate an audience member to let me know. I go, if I'm the third show, what's your name? Paul. Paul, if I say something that sounds familiar to you, like you'd heard it in the last 10 or 15 or 20 minutes, let me know and I'll say something else.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, you almost got to do that.
Yeah. All right.
Although you're inviting someone to heckle you then.
Oh, that's all right. That's going to happen. Whatever. Pat McGann is here. We'll be back after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Pat McGann is here. Sitting right over there. You should see him. Well, you can see him at Zany's. He's performing at Zany's in Chicago, the original Zany's on Well Street. You got shows all this weekend. Go to zanys.com for all your ticket information. Pat, about a year ago, you made a commercial for Kellogg's.
It was great. I think I said that last time you were here. Sorry, I didn't know.
It's worthy of repeating, I think. You can use that in your skit.
Yeah.
A little sketch. Skit. Oh, my God. You're such a parent in your skit.
Will there be a follow-up? Because a lot of times, like, I'll watch the commercial, and at the end, I want to know more about the dad and the kids. What
I think they killed
them?
Me off. I think they did. I'm not sure. They've moved on. So that was for cinnamon Frosted Flakes.
Right.
And now I think there's a new flavor out.
Yeah, kale.
Kale.
Kids are
guacamole.
Guacamole.
Guacamole Frosted Flakes.
But what if it's like This Is Us, and they'll do your character, like, younger before he had kids, or an older... Well, you, I guess
you know, I wish they would,
dead.
Because... I think they stopped airing it.
Oh, they did? I saw it fairly recently.
No more checks coming. Oh, so
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm bummed.
Are you still reading another stuff, though?
I have not been on a ton of auditions lately.
No?
I really have not.
You're too busy.
Yeah, no. I would go on them. Usually, they still, like, even if you're too busy to go, you still get the opportunity, but...
Have you done a lot of what they call bite and smile auditions, where the entire audition is you with a spoon with there's no food underneath it, but you have to pretend you're taking some pudding or some cottage cheese or some yogurt, put it in your mouth, and then just give that, this is good stuff.
No, just for the Frosted Flakes one. That was really about it.
I used to do that in the mirror by myself when I was younger. I wish we had video cameras back then.
Just practice.
Yeah. Pearl Drops tooth polish. Remember that?
Yeah, sure.
It's a great feeling.
Yeah.
I cannot get comfortable auditioning.
No?
Why?
No.
Why
I don't know. I just...
Don't feel like yourself?
Occasionally. I think I've gotten a little bit more comfortable, and now you'll see things come in, and you're like, oh, that I could do. That. But sometimes you get stuff, and you're like, I could never do this. You know, like a role where you got to be...
Something that's so unlike you that you just know it's wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you change when a camera's on you? Because it can be very normal right now, and then if somebody's in here videotaping, it just something switches in me. I can't be myself. I hate cameras.
A little bit. I feel more comfortable than I used to, because I never did. I got into stand-up just to do stand-up. Yeah. I never thought that I would be in a commercial or do any acting. I never... had any...
There was no dream of, like, when we were kids, they would go and they'd see Gabe Kaplan or Freddie Prinze in a club and they'd just build a sitcom around them. Drew Carey, Jerry Seinfeld. There was no aspirations like that for you at all?
Not really. No. I just wanted to do stand-up. But now that I'm doing it...
I'd watch your show.
Now that I'm doing it, I would love to have a sitcom and, you know, something built around my act.
What would it be? What would you be, a stand-up comic in the sitcom, or would you do something else?
The more I think about it, I love... Curb Your Enthusiasm. I loved the Larry Sanders Show.
Yeah.
And I think of a hybrid of that where it would be me in Chicago. You know, I've built up a lot of relationships here in the city.
Uh-huh.
Just coming on here today. You know, I feel like I did this week and WGN Morning News and, you know, a couple other radio shows and then going to Zany's and I do a podcast with the White Sox and...
Having a Vienna beef.
Kind of like being...
It's you.
Big fish, small pond, like... In Chicago, like close to, because everyone I meet's like, when are you going to go to New York? When are you going to go to LA? And I'm like, I'm staying here.
Right.
I'm good here right now. So I feel like that. And then comics come in from New York and LA and they're like, you know, how much time do you have? Like, do you headline? Like,
yeah,
you know, you're pretty good. Like, and I've done some late night spots. I've gone out and done Colbert and that Letterman. Stuff. So I think it's like, it's interesting to just be in here. Here's a storyline I have. Yeah. Jason Benetti, who I love.
Oh, from we do too. Yeah.
From the White Sox. He's the best. I hope he's listening right now.
Yep.
He's fantastic.
He does the White Sox
But he's
here.
Almost too great. He's very personable, very funny. Mm-hmm. So he's starting to do a lot of the stuff at the White Sox that I used to do. You know, mm-hmm. He's doing stuff with the podcast. He's hosting a lot of their charity shows. And I'm like, dude.
You're in the lurch.
That's what I used to do. But everyone loves Jason Benetti. Right. So I can't be like, hey, this guy is taking my work.
Right.
I feel like that would be a great episode.
But should
where
something...
he's like almost intentionally doing it.
Oh,
but
that's
only,
very funny.
Only I, only him
that's
and I
great.
Are on that level. Like, only I know that he's
right.
doing this stuff. You know,
that, I like that.
That would be good.
I don't know. That's kind of what I think. Or the other sitcom idea would be just me having three young kids, me and my wife, and the family thing.
That works. And now that the middle's off the air, I would definitely
There's
watch
a gap
that.
But like I did that show on WCIU, that New Year's Eve special, and just building that show. I was, you know, and there are some characters over there as we were putting it together, building a local TV show.
Yeah.
And then also scrambling to do, you know, going on a commercial audition for Frosted Flakes. And yeah, I was on Chicago PD going on that audition. And,
oh, were you? I didn't know that.
You should call it the world's most interesting man or Chicago's most interesting man.
You never saw me on Chicago PD?
I didn't know you were on Chicago PD.
That was the best acting I've done.
What did you play on that?
I was a curious neighbor. This woman, I forget her name, the character's name, but she, the older woman, police officer, she gets beat up, like almost like carjacked in front of the house.
Yeah.
And then I come out and I'm like, you know, call 911, call 911, like screaming. I had a couple scenes.
Pat, that's what a curious neighbor would do in a situation like that. I thought that was very convincing.
A curious, caring neighbor.
That was excellent.
Yeah, it was.
Well, what about a spinoff of that guy? Where?
I came out in my Frosted Flakes headband.
You did?
With the orange,
wig?
Yeah, and
oh,
the jersey.
Man.
Like, I was practicing for the audition.
But think
and then
about
I
a
ran
show
out.
Where there's a guy who every week just happens to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and he's always curious about what has happened. I think that's gold.
Just call it Curious Neighbor.
Now we're talking.
Can we be in it when you have a sitcom? At some
of course.
Point?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that this would be it. This would, you know, just my day.
Pat, I'm just getting a text that Jason Benetti has been signed for a sitcom with almost exactly what we're talking about right now. That's just coming in over the wire.
I just got it in that he's going to be at Zany's, Jason Benetti.
Is he filling in? Pat, this is terrible.
I would not be surprised.
He's out to get you.
Benetti.
He's your arch enemy.
Hey, Bill and Wendy, speaking of breaking news, breaking news story here, Paul Manafort sent to jail.
Really?
Former Trump campaign chief Paul Manafort sent to jail. We'll tell you more at the top of the hour.
Well, thank you for keeping us posted.
You have a whole new 45 minutes now, Pat, for your show tonight.
That'd be great if that happened tonight in my closer.
Yeah, just end with that.
In the middle of a joke. Hey, I don't want to break in, but we're at war.
Right. Enjoy your weekend. Happy Father's Day, everybody. Yeah, do that. That's a good time. That's excellent. Great to see you. I'm so glad things are going well for you. You deserve all of this.
Good to see you guys.
I'm not saying Jason Benetti doesn't deserve some of it, because he does. You know
he
that.
Does.
He does.
Love him.
Yeah.
I just think it's funny.
Yeah, it is.
Man, I'm going to miss coming here. This is awesome. You guys are fantastic.
Oh.
Good luck at the new studio.
We'll Thank have you there. Pat. You'll see. It's
yeah,
nice.
For
it's
sure.
super nice.
Yeah.
Good.
You can help us set up.
Thanks. I feel very special coming in here on the last day.
On the last day.
Thank you.
That's what happened.
We
All
love
right.
you, Pat.
Thank you, Pat. That's Pat McGann. Go see him at Zany's, please, on Wall Street. Go to chicago.zanies.com. All your ticket info is there. A quick break, some news, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Do the robot with me, Bill.
I'd rather not. If you want me to, I will, but I'd prefer not to.
Oh, you're not doing it now?
No, not now. No, that's offensive. Alexander Zelbin joins us right now. Alexander is the managing editor of Decider.com, a great website if you like entertainment, if you like TV. How are you, Alexander? Thanks for being here.
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Really good. I want you to fill in the blanks for us on something really quickly. Of course, the Roseanne saga has been going on for a while. Wendy and I were talking about how the other day she kind of sort of made some amends. She wants the show to come back. She's trying to. she said that she wants the show to come back. And originally they said if the show comes back, even though it would be without her, a spin-off version of the show, she would still benefit financially because she's part owner of the show. Mm-hmm. But now she says that she would forego her money. She just wants the cast and crew to be working again. What do you know about any of this?
I mean, that's pretty much it. What they've been kind of talking about, though, ABC hasn't confirmed it, is that if they did a spinoff, it would star Sarah Gilbert. It would potentially have the same cast and crew so that nobody would lose their jobs. But reportedly, one of the big sticking points behind the scenes at ABC is that Roseanne contractually would still be an executive producer, most likely, which means that she would get money. She hinted that she would be making some sort of restitution, and this is the thing, again, reportedly, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes shenanigans going on, is that she would forego the money, which potentially would free them to actually go ahead with the spinoff like they want to do. So we'll see. We'll see if that happens. I mean, that certainly would be good news for a lot of folks who are out of work if it does work out.
I mean, I'll give it a shot because I love the characters, but I'm going to be missing Roseanne and I'm still mad at her. Mm-hmm. I really am. She's disappointed me.
Yeah, and she keeps doing it. I don't want to necessarily want to repeat the tweets that she's been posting out, but yeah. She keeps kind of digging herself a bigger hole.
Like, just shut up already.
Got her fired. Yeah, she's just got to stop talking about
sometimes
that,
also, you know, when a show has a specter hanging over it, and I guess the example I will use is
Silk Specter.
Remember on news radio after Phil Hartman died and the show went mm-hmm. another year without Phil Hartman, they had John Lovitz come in. Even though almost everybody was still in their place, it was hard to watch the show.
Yeah, you're right.
You know,
mm-hmm. the tough thing to tell is I don't think, to be perfectly honest, they were exactly aware where the audience for the new Roseanne was coming from. You know, there was a lot of talk about, yes, it's finally a Trump supporter show. That part of the country can check out a show. But I don't think that's exactly true. And particularly the politics in Roseanne don't necessarily always match up to that. So certainly they could have a reboot, a spinoff, if you will, that would just savagely rip into Roseanne, but that might alienate some of the audience, that might engender some of them. It's a tricky line to walk. I think there's a way of doing it, but they'd have to hit it just right.
They did that a little bit on Two and a Half Men after Charlie Sheen left. They would take an occasional dig at him, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think that's one that's actually closer to news radio. Excuse me. The Phil Hartman death, it affected everybody. I mean, not just in culture at large, but particularly in that cast. And
yeah.
Like you said, I don't think they ever recovered from it. But something like Charlie Sheen, where he imploded, it was nice to see him go. And I agree with you, Roseanne, of course. She's in the title of the center of Roseanne. But at the same time, there might be something interesting in treating it in a similar way, where they just dig at her and dig at her and dig at her.
All right. Some news has come out about American Horror Story. We now know more about Season 8. What has been divulged?
So if you are a fan of the franchise, you know you can never expect anything. Now, we thought that Season 8 was going to be a sci-fi season set about a year and a half in the future. As of last night, producer Ryan Murphy said, surprise, no, it's not. It's actually the Coven Murder House crossover that fans have been waiting for. We have no idea who exactly is going to be in it, though we do have a bunch of people in the lineup who are returning. Sarah Paulson, of course, will be in it. Billy Eichner will be in it. A bunch of other folks who have been on previous iterations. How it'll all work together and whether it'll bring back folks like Jessica Lange is one of the big questions right now. But for fans, it's pretty exciting because, honestly, they've been waiting for this one for a while.
All right. If people aren't familiar with American Horror Story, what they have is a cast of actors that frequently play different characters in various seasons. Depending on what that season is about, the actors play different characters. So how will that work out? Some of the actors were both in Coven and Murder House playing different characters. Well, how will they solve that?
Yeah, I've honestly lost track at this point of who everybody is playing.
Oh, all right.
Sarah Paulson has done, I think, 9 characters over the various seasons. She's definitely going to be in this. I think she's going to play probably, if they bring in everybody she played in both of those seasons, it'll probably be 3 or 4 characters that she's just popping up as various times.
Mm-hmm.
The great thing about the show, if you do like the show, is anything goes. You know, one of my writers, Kayla Cobb, pointed out the other day that in the middle of the Asylum season that was technically about, you know, 1950s serial killers, they just threw in aliens. They just had aliens show up for no particular reason. So having a bunch of Sarah Paulsons run around, I don't think anybody would blink an eye.
All right, that's doable. This is kind of a confusing story, but let's talk about Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things. She's had a pretty horrendous week.
Yeah, she left social media. Now, somebody started a hashtag, take down Millie Bobby Brown, because of some pics that they didn't particularly like. They started posting homophobic memes on her Instagram, I believe, and she just decided she had enough and left. And that's kind of the long and the short of it, but the bigger thing is this is something that's been happening a lot in social media with celebrities. I believe we talked about it last week with Kelly Marie Tran from Star Wars, The Last Jedi, same sort of thing, where she was being bullied on social media. It's pretty bad, and it's also pretty bad to bully a 14-year-old off of social media. I think people should, you know, to use a phrase from William Shatner on SNL, they should grow up.
Yeah. So for people who don't understand the storyline, it's a little confusing, but things were being said, they're attributed to her, very homophobic things that she didn't say, but it was made to look online as though she was responsible for these things, even though she wasn't.
Right, exactly. And then people bullied her back and threw things back at her, and rather than get involved, she just left. I think, honestly, this is something we're going to be seeing a lot more of, is celebrities, rather than engaging, rather than dealing with the constant abuse, just leaving social media and, you know, getting on with their lives and their work.
I'm getting so sick of social media. I really am. Yeah. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
I mean, days will go by and it's like, oh, God, I haven't updated my status on my Facebook. Here's another picture of my puppy. I just don't want to even anymore.
I know.
I do think there's a lot of positive things that have come out of social media, that there are connections that people made. There's been people that have been bumped up and given a lot of hope through people connecting with them all over the world. But there's also a lot of really negative things as well. And like you said, it becomes an obligation to people rather than a fun side thing to do.
So true. This segment with Alexander Zeldman is sponsored by Wow Internet TV Phone. Stick around. In a little bit, we'll tell you what the wow moment of the week is. It's a very, spoiler alert, it is a very distressing one, one that I hope isn't true. We'll get to that in just a little bit. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Alexander Zeldman is our guest, managing editor of Decider.com. If you haven't visited Decider.com, do yourself a favor. See it. I think you'll enjoy what you read. All right. Most of these stories are pretty negative, Alex. I got to be honest with you. Let's start out with the Star Trek story. What's going on over there?
Yeah, been a real bummer of a week, you guys. So Star Trek Discovery, one of my absolute favorite shows of the past year on CBS All Access. It came out last night. They've had a bunch of turnaround behind the scenes. Whoever knows necessarily with these stories, but reportedly what happened was that Aaron Harberts and, oh gosh, I'm blanking her name, Gretchen Berg, the showrunners of the show were ousted. They were put on a leave due to what, quote unquote, operational and leadership issues. What sources said happened was basically they were shouting at the show writing staff and making it a very unsafe place for everybody to be. Not only that, but also one of the executive producers I'm completely blanking on his name as well. There's a lot of names. One of the executive producers also was Akiva Goldsman, was also being abusive with the writing staff and has left the show as well. The good news about it is that Alex Kurtzman, who was on board for the first season of the show and also produced and worked on a bunch of the big screen movies, is taking over as the showrunner for the rest of season two. If you're a fan of the show, they should still be on time for the 2019 broadcast date. But it's a bit of a bummer, particularly because the first season was so good.
Quite a shakeup. And when we say abusive, do we know exactly what that entails, or has that not been said?
So one of the reports has that Harberts leaned on the writer's desk and shouted an expletive in a writer's face, making the entire room uncomfortable. I'm sure there had to be more than that at that point, though. Those reports haven't come out.
Wow, that's a lot going on over there. Speaking of scandal, there's a scandal over at The Bachelorette. What's the scandal there?
That it's still on.
That it's still on. Wow.
Yeah, this has not been an easy season for the show. They've had multiple things going on, from a contestant liking racist and homophobic memes on Instagram to now one of the Bachelorette contestants who, at least for now, is still on the show, Lincoln Adam. I might be pronouncing his name wrong. He has been accused of assault. And in fact, convicted for it. So where that heads the show from here, we don't exactly know. ABC pushed back on it a little bit. They said they had no knowledge about the incident or the charges or anything like that. But certainly it's going to throw the rest of the season in a lot of distress.
All right. Speaking of The Bachelorette, I keep seeing ads for a show called The Proposal that looks just like, to me, I don't know, it looks exactly like The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. And they even say from the producers of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, what's the difference?
Sure, not much. It's premiering on Monday. Like you said, it's from one of the creators of The Bachelor. And it's basically The Bachelor, except they never see The Bachelor until the very last episode. I would argue, given all the things that The Bachelor and The Bachelorette have gone through over the past couple of seasons,
Yeah. Maybe
they want to just do a calmer concept. Maybe they just want to, you know, concentrate on love and dating and stuff like that. But
sure.
Going steady. That's what they should call it.
Going steady. Like that.
Yeah. Keep your distance. Keep your foot while you're dancing.
But now with this one, with The Proposal, will we be guaranteed that the kids who fall in love are in love forever? Because that's been a little bit of a problem on The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, right?
Yeah, they're definitely going to be in love forever. No, I don't know. I mean, if anything, it's going to be worse because they're not going to see the person until the very end. I assume the idea is to fall in love with the person's personality versus
sure.
what they look like. But
it's very realistic.
I don't know, man.
All right. Tell me, I need some good news in my life. 12 Monkeys. What do we know about 12 Monkeys?
I love this show. If you've never checked it out, it's not just one of the best shows on the Sci-Fi Channel, but one of the best shows on TV. It started inspired by the Terry Gilliam movie with Bruce Willis about a time traveler who tries to stop a global plague before it kills most of the world's population. But it's gotten so big and epic and weird over the course of four seasons. The fourth season kicks off tonight with three episodes, and they're actually doing a fun broadcast structure where you can watch three episodes for the next three Fridays, and then they have a two-episode finale the fourth weekend. So if you're looking for kind of like a mix between a binge and a broadcast schedule, they got you handled there. But it's fun. It's weird. Every episode stands by itself and plays with fun time travel tropes. And I'll also mention, if you're a fan of the Back to the Future series, it's actually in a weird way inspired more by that than it is by the 12 Monkeys movie, because Terry Matalas, who's the co-creator of the show, is no joke the biggest Back to the Future fan in the world. So search the show for Easter eggs and you will be well rewarded.
It's one of those shows. Now, I know that this is going to be its final season, 12 Monkeys, and it's also its fourth mm-hmm. season. But I loved the original movie, and I heard they're doing a TV show, and I go, I got to see that, but I'll wait to make sure that the show, you know, mm-hmm. lasts a little while. I had no idea this was already the fourth season. It seems like it just started 10 minutes ago.
This is one of those shows that, to be perfectly honest, nobody watched while I was on. I was looking at the ratings the other day, and they just went down a cliff. But the first three seasons are on Hulu right now. It's a great easy binge because it's about 10 to 13 episodes per season, so it's very easy to handle. I'll mention I've seen a little more than half of this final season. I don't know totally if they'll stick the landing, but it's phenomenal so far, and it's been really consistent across the board. So whether you watch it over the next month or when it all ends up on Hulu on streaming, I definitely recommend checking it out. It's a lot of fun.
I have finally caught up on Arrested Development. I watched the long-awaited, was it season 5?
Mm-hmm.
I skipped 4 because, really, I started watching it, and Alexander, you said it was fine to do it because they did a recap. I loved it. Now, mm-hmm. now I'm disappointed that I'm finished with it, and I want more, and I think there are more episodes coming for this season, correct?
They're done with this season, but one little trick that I'll tell you, if you do want to go back and watch the fourth season, if you're really aching for more Arrested Development, there were two edits of it. There was the regular edit that they originally put up, and then there was a remixed edit where they made it seem a little more like Arrested Development episodes by mixing all of the storylines together. That is nowhere near as good as the original season 4, which, mind you, was just okay. But you can still watch the original season 4 by going to bonus features on the season 4 on Netflix, mm-hmm. and you can find it that way. So if you really want to watch more, it's there for you to check.
Why not?
All
why
right,
not?
Perfect.
All right. I've never prefaced the wow moment of the week this way, but it needs to be said. I hope so badly this isn't true because I really like this guy.
Me too.
What is the wow moment of the week?
So, as you said, the wow moment of the week is a really unfortunate one. This broke this morning. There's a lot going on here, and I'll couch this in. We don't know all the details yet. But Chris Hardwick's ex-girlfriend, Chloe Dykstra, posted a very long post on Medium. She's now on a social media break after this, making herself, I think rightly so, generally available while she takes a break, but talking about how he emotionally and physically abused her throughout their years-long relationship. She never mentions him by name. She never says Chris or Chris Hardwick at any point in the piece, but to anybody who knows them, it's very clear who she's talking about. And there's been a social media firestorm after that of people calling for AMC to respond, for Nerdist, his company, to respond, and also from things like he is supposed to moderate a couple of San Diego Comic-Con panels to get somebody else to do those instead. It's very unfortunate. I would say on a personal level, I know, in full disclosure, both of them, and I've met them and chatted with them socially. I think I believe Chloe, for better or for worse.
Oh, I hope so badly this isn't true.
Can I just ask a question, though? At some point, I think, why shouldn't you just go to the police instead of doing it over social media? I guess that's my only question. Like,
I'm not a cop or a legal expert,
right.
But we were talking about this quite a bit in the office this morning. The thing that makes it so tough, beyond the fact that the law is not necessarily cited in favor of women, is that there are so many different levels to these type of things that it's hard to parse. You know, you have the Harvey Weinstein level of somebody who is, trigger warning, but raping dozens or hundreds of people and committing clear crimes. And then you have things like the Aziz Ansari allegations that came out, which did seem very bad and weren't great, but also could be, well, that was a terrible date, or that was a terrible thing that happened with two people, and who exactly knows?
It's a more gray area, I guess, is what you're saying. That's true.
Exactly. And people, I think, often feel very trapped. She talks about this in the piece quite a bit, where she didn't know how to talk about this. You know, she didn't know how to say anything out loud. She didn't know who to go to or what to do. And so for her, putting this out here wasn't so much as attacking him as clearing her deck, getting the thing that's been eating away at her out, and so she can move on with her life.
He is since married to somebody else, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Got married a couple years ago. Yeah. Wow, that's quite a story. That is quite a story, Alex. And I, like I said, I hope so badly it isn't true, but I guess time will tell, huh?
But then I hope she heals too if she's coming forth with something. You know, I don't want a victim shame ever.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
it's unfortunate for both people.
Yes.
Alex, thanks for being here. Greatly appreciated, and we hope for better news next week.
Absolutely. I'll cross my fingers
Please.
And do what I can.
That would be nice. Alexander Zelvin, managing editor of Decider.com. It's right there on your computer. We'll take a quick break, then some news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Kim. That was our last newscast in our show from this building.
That's
although
sad.
Kim's
yep.
over
Even
there.
Even though I'm here, it's still the history.
But, Kim, you've got a box set of all the news stories you've done over the years that you want to sell, don't you?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's available.
It's a 6-CD set.
Yeah.
With more to come.
I'm in.
All right. We're going to talk sports. Chicago, America's best sports town. Brian Sandelo in the studio with us. This is a great book that you should purchase for your dad or loved one for Father's Day. How about that?
Yeah, thank you very much. I think you just said everything you need to say right now.
Well,
yes.
I want to say something, and I want to ask Bill. Yesterday was a memorable day in sports history. What was it? Dun, dun,
was yesterday
dun,
the anniversary
dun,
of something
dun,
that happened?
Yes.
Was
yes. 20th okay. anniversary.
Of
let Bill come on.
I honestly don't know. What
Michael Jeffrey
it?
Jordan.
Yeah,
it was his. He delivered his final shot on the court and the second three-peat. Correct.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
For all intents
Southside and, Wendy yes. checking in here.
Very nice.
And for all intents and purposes, everything I care about, that's his last shot ever. We don't need to discuss.
The Washington years never took place.
What years?
Yeah.
What are we talking about here? I don't know. I think it was that was the end of his career.
Can you even debate, because every once in a while, you'll see a debate about LeBron James being a better basketball player. Other names have come up.
That was
ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
If anybody is going to take Michael Jordan's crown, it's going to be LeBron James, because he is incredible. Let's not say
he's
that
no
he's
Michael
not.
Jordan.
But it's hard to debate six titles. I know that people are saying, oh, he's been to all these NBA finals and he's done so much with worse supporting cast, but Michael Jordan 6-0 in the NBA finals is, I think it's hard to beat.
Sometimes, and for people who follow his career, you know the stories already, he'd have the flu. He had a 103 fever and he still had an amazing game. One time he was hit by a train on the way to the game, head on. He still scored 71 points. You can't even debate it. It's ridiculous.
No, I mean, what Michael Jordan's impact is we're still feeling it today. LeBron James is wonderful. I don't want anyone to think that I don't think that he's great.
Yeah.
But LeBron James is still following in the footsteps of Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan was the first basketball player to be that kind of celebrity, that kind of international marketing star, the first player to become an owner, if I'm not mistaken. Those are all things that LeBron James aspires to do or will do, but he won't be the first because Michael Jordan was the one who's now the owner. He's the one who kind of blazed that trail.
Right.
He's still number one.
He just is the best.
So
the
good.
Way he hung in the air like that. I know the Cubs are going to get some love, and we'll talk about that. Bill can bring that up. But I love the White Sox. I've been a Sox fan. We have the White Sox on this radio station. I mentioned to you a great picture of the 70s uniform with Goose Gossage
a
wearing
very
it.
Very young Rich Goose Gossage.
Yes.
Very young.
I loved watching those players wear those. We were talking to Ed Farmer. He said that they were comfortable, but the look was not the right way. And you have a memorable moment about these uniforms.
Yes. So everyone remembers the night that Chris Sale tore up the jerseys.
Edward Scissorhand,
you mean? Where he wanted to cut them up because he didn't want to wear them. And I will always remember the date is July 23rd, 2016. I will always remember that.
Why?
Because that was my wedding day.
Oh,
and
nice.
We were supposed to get married outdoors at my in-laws' grounds. They have a nice big spread of land, but it rained. Cats and dogs, lightning, thunder, all of that. So we were delayed for 2 hours. So here's what I did to keep myself sane during that. I followed everything that was coming out of US Cellular Field, all the tweets and everything. That kept me kind of thinking, you know what? You're not Chris Sale.
Right.
Things could be worse.
Right.
And then you know what? Got married very happily.
Oh, good.
Awesome.
So,
did your wife cut up the wedding dress after the wedding?
I don't believe so. I think we've still got that somewhere. But I will always remember July 23rd, 2016 is the date that Chris Sale tore that up because I was giving updates to people waiting for the wedding. They were like, when are you going to get married, Brian? Like, well, I don't know, but Chris Sale just did this.
I didn't realize it was these old jerseys he cut up, and what a baby. I mean, the more I think about it, I don't want to wear them. I'll cut them up.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that the Sox, obviously, they didn't wear the shorts. I think it was 2015. The Sox wore those as throwbacks in 2015, and everyone loved them. I mean, looked weird, but they're supposed to be very comfortable. So the players for one game had a sense of humor about it and wore them. Chris Sale the next year, of course, had no sense of humor, and then coincidentally or not, now he's with the Boston Red Sox.
When you think about how innovative the White Sox have been over the years, do you give the biggest nod to Bill Veeck? Is it mostly because of Bill Veeck?
Bill Veeck is a huge part of that. I mean, some of his innovations didn't work, and some of his baseball decisions after they won the pennant in 1959 kind of backfired. They made a lot of win-now trades that didn't help.
Mm-hmm.
But things like the exploding scoreboard, even names on the back of the jersey. Can you picture teams now not wearing that? I know.
They didn't have it before?
No.
Really?
No, it's a very simple it's just a very simple marketing trick, but it's innovative now. Can you imagine buying a Bulls jersey with 23 but no name on it? All that started because of Bill Veeck. So, I mean, yes.
There were also silly things like the shower in the outfield was silly. Do you remember the thing? I don't know how old you are, but for a while there was a thing on home plate that would come out of home plate and spin around and it would clean off home plate automatically.
See,
do you remember that?
I don't remember that. I'm only
like a scrubbing bubble kind of thing?
Like a scrubbing bubble.
I'm only 32, so I don't quite remember that. But I do know about the shower. I do know the exploding scoreboard, names on the back of the jerseys. And that's creative.
And mullet night, yes.
Tonight, I think.
I know it is tonight.
Yeah, I wish I was covering tonight because I would try to turn my hair into a mullet tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
And,
I just want to say you're a sports reporter mainly for the Chicago Sun-Times, Associated Press, Sports Exchange, and Chicago Side Sports.
Yeah.
The official launch for this book, Chicago, America's Best Sports Town, taking place tonight?
Yes, and at the bookseller in Lincoln Square. That is kind of like my home bookstore.
Good.
I can walk there, which is really, in case people want to do things with me after.
hang out?
Yeah, we can have a little hang, and I don't have to drive, so that's really good. But yeah, come out, say hello. I'll sign a copy for you, and you can. We have a little bit of a Q&A. Maybe I'll have a nice little sentimental speech thanking everybody.
Oh, 7 o'clock.
So nice. Yes, and so you can ask me about sports, about the book, about journalism, anything that you want to ask me. It's like an AMA.
Before we go to break, I need to ask you this. Since we were talking about the White Sox, people forget, but this is a very important moment for the White Sox. We came within inches of them leaving town, probably for Florida. It was saved very, very late at night one night. That would have been a horrible thing for the city to have lost the White Sox.
It would have been absolutely terrible. And I know that, you know, my dad, who's a big diehard Cubs fan, even he was telling me how sad he would have been because Chicago needs two teams.
Yeah.
You know, North Side, South Side, that's part of our identity, that we have multiple teams, that we have this rivalry built in. And the South Side would have lost so much of its identity, I think, if the Sox had moved to Tampa Bay. Now, they probably would not have been better off because, as we know, that stadium was outdated the day that the Rays moved in.
Yeah.
So they'd probably be looking to move back to Chicago at this point, or actually somebody really smart would have moved into the South Side probably about a minute after the Sox moved out. I would think. I mean, how about who wouldn't want it?
Brian Sandalo is his name. The book is Chicago, America's Best Sports Town. We'll discuss more next. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Here's a great book to pick up for your dad for Father's Day. It's called Chicago, America's Best Sports Town, written by sports writer Brian Sandalo. What do you think, Brian, makes this the best sports town?
Well, we're the best sports town because, first of all, we support all four major teams. Plus, we have a very vivid high school scene.
Five major teams.
All four major sports.
Yeah.
Four major sports, five major teams. We have a bunch of lower-level pro teams, a lot of college teams. We have the best high school basketball in the country. And then the way that we support the big five teams. Everyone loves the Bulls, the Bears, the Blackhawks.
Except Bill. Bill's bailing on the Bears. He bailed on the Bears.
I give up.
Have patience. I think 2019.
Really? All right.
2019 is going to be a great year.
All right.
2018 is going to be transitional. But then for 6 months, we all go into our separate tribes. There are Cubs fans. There are White Sox fans. There's that rivalry where everybody takes sides. But yet in September, everyone unites again to become Bears fans. They unite in October to become Bulls and Hawks fans. And that's something that's so unique that we can all have these divisions yet come together for all of our teams. I think there's something poetic about that. I think there's something cool about that. And I think that it would be a good example for people to follow in general, that we can all come together.
I am a Sox fan. I learned that from my grandfather. I have never liked the Cubs. Although when they were going for the World Series, I kind of swallowed my pride a little bit and said, you know what? They were the best team in baseball.
Right.
They deserved it.
Yeah.
I didn't want them to win two in a row, but that's okay. But Bill is one of the few people I know who really, truly does like both teams.
I do.
Is that possible?
I guess it is. I mean, how does that work?
You're the only one I know, Bill.
How does that happen?
When I was a kid, my dad worked for a company that had season tickets for both the Cubs and the White Sox, so we would go to an equal number of Cubs games and White Sox games, and it always doubled my chances of seeing a team go, you know, into the playoffs in the World Series. So I was always baffled that more people weren't fans of both teams.
Well, that's fine. I mean, and you can make the argument that anybody that wears Chicago on their chest, why wouldn't somebody from the North Side cheer for the White Sox?
Right.
But yet still, for a lot of people, they see part of the identity of being a Cubs fan is not caring about the White Sox.
Right.
And part of the identity of being a White Sox fan is hating the Cubs.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Do they hate the team or do they hate the fandom?
It's the fandom.
Isn't it?
I feel like some White Sox fans hate everything that goes along with Cubdom.
Yeah.
Because we're the second child. We're that redheaded stepchild that the White Sox never got the attention that the Cubs did, ever. Even when they won the World Series.
Okay, only one national outlet occasionally forgets that the White Sox won the World Series. It's the four letter. We know that occasionally they'll forget that.
To start with an E?
Yes, and ends with an SPN.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah. But I feel like the White Sox get their share.
Not even in the paper. Bill, you agree with this.
There are times on the sports page where the first two or three back pages of the sports page are devoted to the Cubs, and then we'll say Mark Burley throws no hitter, and you know, four pages later for the White Sox.
The Sox get their share. I mean, I'll be out there Sunday for the Sun-Times. I can tell you this.
You've been good about it.
The Sun-Times will give them. The Sun-Times gives the Sox their share just as equally as the Cubs. And people love the White Sox. They're a huge part of this city. And as we said, if Big Jim Thompson hadn't stopped the clock, that would have been a tragedy. So
I'm
glad that he stopped that clock.
Let's talk about the resurgence of Blackhawk fans and the Blackhawk team here in the city, because there was a time where you'd watch the Blackhawks and you go, I don't know if we're ever going to win another championship. It's impossible. This is just not happening. And boy, did they turn it
around. And was it Duncan Keith and Patrick Kane trying to give away tickets at Union Station to go to a game and no one would even take free tickets back then?
There were stories about Patrick Sharp and
And
Duncan Keith and Seabrook, who would just try to hand out tickets to people. And people would say,
I'm busy.
I got other things going on. You know, I'm going to watch TV that night. It's incredible. It just shows what was there. It was just waiting under the surface. People needed any sort of excuse to come back, and boy did they. The second the sellout streak started in the end of the 07-08 season, which if you remember was a year the Hawks missed the playoffs. People were so eager and ready for this team to become good, and then when they finally became really good, it was like this catharsis. Everyone was just waiting, and they had their excuse now to become fans, and it's been a heck of a run. Now it'll be interesting to see how people react if there's another bad season.
There won't be.
You don't think so?
I don't.
No?
I just can't imagine it being as bad as this year was.
I don't know. They have to be very active this offseason. They have some cap space for the first time in a long time. They have to improve the blue line somehow, some way. If they come back with the same six, it's going to be a very similar season. But just
Do something radical?
I don't know about radical. I think that they can make incremental improvements. And if Corey Crawford is healthy, I think they were a playoff team last season.
It can't all be based on a goalie, though.
But the way that they play around, the way that they play, it puts pressure on it puts pressure on the goalie, especially when you have the blue line like they did last season.
No Marian Hossa, though.
Right,
that was
too.
A problem.
And Marian Hossa was such a big
loss.
Was a great two-way player. A lot of people were focusing on, they have their cap space now. They're out from under that contract. Yes, but they have a short window because of the age of their core.
Right.
If you have Marian Hossa, it gives you a better chance to win the cup.
But do you credit all this change? It's got to be. It's Rocky Wirtz and it's John McDonough.
Right.
It was those guys figuring out and fast what needed to be done to turn this team back into a winner.
It was Rocky Wirtz. It was a weird way to show respect for your father by, the man had been dead for a few days and he's just deciding to reverse everything that he did.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a strange way to mourn the loss of your father, but that's what he did.
Yeah.
He just went out and hired John McDonough, and the rest has been history. The McDonough recognized what he had to do, and there's a real honor to that, and there's a real intelligence to it, to realizing that you've got to just blur everything up and start over. And that's very cool.
All right, we haven't spent a lot of time on the Bears because Bill is not a fan. No. I'm still a Bears fan. I mean, I'm just born and bred a Bears fan, and I'm not going the Packer way. Who wrote the foreword to your book?
some guy who coached the team in the 80s. Some guy named Ditka.
Where would we know him?
Where wouldn't you know him? He was the coach of the Super Bowl champion Bears and also a great player for the Bears in the early 60s, which some people maybe my generation don't realize that he was maybe the first great tight end in football.
Changed the position,
right? He completely changed the position. You see a guy like Rob Gronkowski now, you can trace that back to what Mike Ditka was doing at Wrigley Field in 1961.
Yeah.
People don't always remember that because he's such a huge media personality, but he was a transformational football player, not just a Super Bowl winning coach.
Yeah.
All right, and you cover, somebody wants to know, what about the Chicago Fire and the women's team covered in this book?
They're all in there. I mean, they're a part of Chicago being America's best sports town. Chicago is more than just the Big Five.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, everyone looks at the Big Five, but you've got the Fire who, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights could not win the championship in their first season. But the Chicago Fire didn't just win the MLS Cup in their first season. They won the U.S. Open Cup. So that is still probably the most accomplished first-year team in North American sports. That's in there. There's a lot about the Wolves, the Chicago Sky. We've got it covered.
Yeah.
Chicago, America's best sports town. I would just say Chicago, America's best town. That's what I would say.
Oh, I can go with that.
All right. He's Brian Sandalo, and you've got a book signing tonight. You can pick up the book. You can go out and hang with him afterwards. It's at 7 o'clock at the Bookseller, 4736-ish North Lincoln Avenue in Chicago.
Yep.
Congratulations on the book.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you for having me, and I feel privileged to be part of this historic
moment.
You're
the last guest in the studio for
us. Last interview.
Ever. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much.
A quick break, then we'll check in with John Hanson, find out what he's got coming up on the Wintrust business launch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Bill, this is it for us.
This is it.
In the Allstate Showcase
Studio.
Say
something profound, Wendy. It's time for you to say something profound.
I just want to say, if you were listening to Steve Cochran earlier today, he did a really good send-off, and I can't do it justice. I was honored to be in such an iconic, legendary radio station.
Yeah. I don't think a day passed by that we didn't come in here and realize the history that this room held.
He's tearing up, ladies and gentlemen.
I'll be all right. It's emotional. I mean, it's the end of an era here. We'll probably do shows from a new location on Monday. That's what I'm being told.
Here's the best part of it. We still have our jobs. So that's why, you know, the listeners don't care where we broadcast from.
Right.
They care what we broadcast.
They just want Gordon Lightfoot tickets. We've learned that the hard way.
It's been such an honor being in these hallowed halls here at WGN Radio. I will miss it greatly.